person that's going to talk on the 12 traditions tonight. I think we kind of adopted him in this group, and he is going to come up and talk on the traditions for us tonight. So let's welcome Charlie.
My name is Charles Lindenwood. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi,
family. I was talking to Bob and a couple of other fellas out there tonight. I told them, if you want to make friends, talk about the 12 steps. If you want to make enemies, talk about 12 traditions. But the 12 traditions are not something that we apologize for. As you just heard read, and I appreciate your reading that, these things are part of what makes this fellowship of ours function. And if we depart from the tenets of the steps and the traditions, we're cheating ourselves. And if we don't learn what they're about, we're cheating others. Because how can we carry a message we haven't got? Tradition one, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. We have three legacies in AA, and we're talking tonight about the third legacy, which is unity. When we say our common welfare, that means the welfare of not only everybody in this room, but everybody in Alcoholics Anonymous. And when we, as individuals who have been in AA and remain sober for any length of time and present this program to other groups or to other individuals, it behooves us to know what we're talking about. And although we present our views as our personal opinions, we certainly do need guidelines. And these guidelines were brought to us in 1947, 8, and 9, and published in book form in 1953. The book that we call the 12 and 12, or the 12 steps and the 12 traditions. Although the 12 traditions were adopted in 1950 at the first International AA Convention, the book wasn't published until April 1953. And when we talk about anything that's common to us, if I'm a printer and I meet another printer, we've got something in common. If I'm an alcoholic and I meet another alcoholic, we've got something in common. And when I stand before a group of professed alcoholics, we are a community of people who are dedicated to the same purpose. And that's what Alcoholics is all about. Alcoholics Anonymous is a group of people who have banded themselves together to fight a common enemy. And that common enemy is alcohol and its effects on us. And that's what it means when it says our common welfare. And our welfare is the transition from an alcoholic who is dependent, an active alcoholic. An alcoholic who is dependent on alcohol, to a sober individual trying to establish a new way of life. That's the short form. Now, we compare the short and the long form. The long form is the form of the 12 traditions that were first printed in a 36-page pamphlet. And our first tradition is, each member of Alcoholics Anonymous is but a small part of a great whole. He must continue to live, or most of us will surely die. Hence, our common welfare comes first. But individual welfare follows close afterwards. Let's take, for instance, things that happen in Alcoholics Anonymous. I know that you've all noticed this sign out here in front. I don't know how many people really believe this or are affected in their lives by this, but it says, be sure what you see here, what you hear here, what you say here, what you do here, that it remains here when you leave here. Nobody in here is really foolish enough to believe that what we're seeing here is ridiculous enough for us to leave it here when we go. If we leave what we see here and hear here and what we heard say here and what we say here and what we do here, if we see that it remains here when we leave, Alcoholics Anonymous stops right here. That did not come from Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know who printed it, but I see it in a number of groups. That's not AA, and that's not the way we work. We share our experience and our strength and our hope with one another. And if we don't bring to some suffering alcoholic what we see here and what we hear, what do you see here? You see miracles, miracle after miracle after miracle. What do you hear said here? You hear the things said here that are from the hearts of people who came here before you did. I think these things are very important, not only to this group, but to every group and every individual, that our means us. Our means you and me. In the steps, they're all plural. There's no we, my. In the traditions, it's ours. That means yours and mine and every other alcoholic that still suffers. And the alcoholic that suffers don't necessarily mean the fellow that's out there drunk somewhere. There's people sitting right in here tonight that have been sober for months or years or any length of time that have got all kinds of troubles and their hearts are crying out to be heard. But they've been sober for a long time and nobody thinks they could possibly have any trouble. The alcoholic who still suffers might be an alcoholic who's been sober a long time. Without unity, AA dies. Individual liberty, yet great unity, key to paradox. What does paradox mean? Paradox means that we hear things in AA that are paradoxical. That means that they kind of oppose one another. Like you'll hear somebody say, when you get to the end of your rope, tie a knot and hang on. And somebody else will say, let go and let God. And that confuses some young folks. When the group must survive or the individual will not. In other words, supposing that you had come to this group tonight or any other night and you'd be the only one here, would you have the courage to sit down and have a meeting with just you and your higher power? Did you ever think that your ultimate authority in Alcoholics Anonymous is a loving God as you understand it? Now, at your present intellectual level, and we've adopted the 12 steps, and we've adopted the Lord's Prayer, we've adopted the Serenity Prayer, and we've adopted one another. As Liz just pointed out, you've adopted me, whether you want to or not. I declared myself in. I came through this town a number of years ago and I saw a sign say AA and I knew I was home. And it didn't make any difference where it was. I knew that I'd find in, not in this building. Part of this building was moved over here, but I knew that I'd find some people that understood me. Tradition two. For a group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. What is your conscience? Inside your breast, there are two governing factors. One is conscience, and the other is temptation. And when these two get to fighting, like, you know, there'll be temptations that go ahead, nobody will know it but you and me. And then conscience will say, you better not do that, because if you do that, you and me and the judge will know it. And so we have to follow the dictates of our conscience, and if there's a question, what do? We follow the conscience of the group. And who's the group? The group, as far as you as an individual is concerned, is somebody that you cabbaged on to. It's a person that we refer to as a sponsor. You elect your own sponsor. And the reason you elect your sponsor is because you feel that that person has enough sobriety that you can listen to what he says and benefit by it. And what happens when you outgrow your sponsor? And you may say, how can you outgrow your sponsor? Supposing you come in out of the gutter like I did, and you bring the gutter with you. So you can't, no matter where you go, you're going to find you when you get there. And you come into AA and you're using the language that you used under the bridge and in the boxcars and in the jails, and you continue to talk that way. And somebody wants you to be their sponsor. And he came in from the same environment you did. And he's cussing and using language that's not acceptable. You've heard language in AA meetings that you'd get kicked out of a bar for using. Now, if that person would happen to be your sponsor and you quit cussing, you passed him. You've outgrown him. It's time for you to get another sponsor. And if your sponsor, right now, I'm talking at you, no matter how long you've been sober, if your sponsor that you've got now is agreeing with everything you say, he's doing you more harm than good. But I've heard a lot of old-timers say, if a young person in AA has got a sponsor he likes, he ought to get him another one. Because your sponsor ought to be making you mad. I mean, because if you came in here because you were right, what the hell? You're here under false pretenses in the first place. Did anybody in here come in there because he was right? Uh-uh. No, you came in here because you was wrong. I mean, dead wrong. And if you think that you were right and you're trying to convince AA that you want them to act like you acted before you came in here, who's going to have to change? And people that do this die. It mentions every once in a while about death. And if you've been in AA any length of time, you've helped carry somebody out. And you've asked God, why have I survived and this man has died? Why is it that I have been spared and this man is gone? We don't know. Nowhere in any publication that Alcoholics Anonymous has is there an explanation for the reason why so many of us die. But all you've got to do is take a tabulation of any group at any given time and come back 1 year later and see how many are missing. There'd be a whole lot of them. Tradition three in the long form. You'll have to pardon me for looking back and forth. You see, the reason I'm doing this, I don't want to present something to you that you can't look up in the book. If it ain't in the book, it ain't AA. Remember that. If it hadn't been accepted and it hasn't been published in AA, it's not AA. Of course, they call that conference-approved literature. There's a whole lot of good books that are not conference-approved. A lot of them I read and won't let nobody know that I read them, but they're good books. Good books. The Bible is not conference-approved. Why? Because Alcoholics Anonymous is non-sectarian. Alcoholics Anonymous don't care if you read the Koran or the King James Version or a newly published version. They don't care if you're an atheist. We got a chapter to the atheist. It's pretty good, too. Sort of fit me. Two. Tradition 2 in the long form is shorter than the short form. That don't sound right, does it? That's another one of them paradoxes. Tradition 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. That keeps coming up over and over. You'll say to yourself, your ultimate authority is a loving God. Because eventually you're going to turn your life and your will over to the care of God as you understand Him. And if you don't do that, you've got a little further to go. But there's no hurry. No hurry. There's no time limit on this. If you don't think that you're as far along as you need to be at this time, don't worry about that. I know a fella, his name is Charles L., that was in AA for 5 years, almost, before he took his last drink. And that fella came in 1940 and didn't have his last drink until May 15th, 1945. And if you think that listening to a person like that would be a foolish thing, don't do it, because you're sitting out there listening to him right now. I was a slow learner, but I want you to know that when I got it, I got it. And I got it, I was first contacted, I was in a nut house, and we didn't have no alcoholism ward, it was mixed nuts. And when I finally got it through my head that I was an alcoholic, I was in another, guess what, in another psychiatric ward. With mixed nuts under the influence of formaldehyde. And if you ain't ever drank no formaldehyde and don't know what that is, that's ether and alcohol mixed. And that's a mess. Huh? Don't get into it. Tradition 3. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. I know people that use that and take that out of context to come in for a whole lots of other reasons than alcohol. What does it say about it? It says early intolerance based on fear. To take away any alcoholic's chance at AA was sometimes to pronounce his death sentence. Membership regulations abandoned. Two examples of experience. Any alcoholic is a member of AA when he says so. If you walked in here and set yourself down among this group of people and you proclaim yourself to be an alcoholic, you just became an alcoholic. And I don't know, I know that a lot of you folks don't even know what it means to go under the bridge and feel at home. I know there's a whole lot of you people that wouldn't know what it meant to go into a jail full of bums and make yourself right at home. But it's the same thing if a bum gets off a freight train and he walks in under the bridge and there's a whole lot of other bums sitting around a pot that's cooking a mulligan stew, he declares himself in, or there's going to be a fight. And that's the way it is here. A man comes into Alcoholics Anonymous, or a lady, walks into Alcoholics Anonymous, they don't know what they're going to find. There's nobody here or anywhere else that can tell a neophyte alcoholic what Alcoholics Anonymous is going to expect of them. And the reason for that is we don't expect anything of them. You wouldn't go out and gather a bunch of rotten eggs and tell somebody how to cook them. And that's exactly what we were. We were spoiled by our own admission. We were rotten eggs. Of course, I could use other expressions, but you using your own expression in your own mind as to what you were, you know you weren't an egg. But you certainly were something that wasn't acceptable. But we won't go into that any further. You are a member of Alcoholics Anonymous when you say so. Now, why do we lose so many people? Why do we lose, it's estimated at different amounts, but I'll say 1 out of 10. 1 out of 10 persons who calls or comes into AA is lost because they don't understand. It's not because we as individuals are not acceptable. It's because they feel they themselves are not acceptable. That they don't fit in. And whose fault is it that the next person who comes through that door, bleary-eyed, a runny nose, and standing in the middle of his wardrobe, and he comes in and sits as far back as he can get, and sneaks out? How come he snuck out? And how come I didn't sneak out after him and put my arm around him and use that old crooked arm therapy and hold him close to me and say, come, go with me and we will do this together? How many of you people know what it means to walk in a mission because you're broke, because you haven't got anything to hock? You're standing in the middle of your wardrobe and you're down to 2 teeth and you ain't got but 1 upstairs and 1 downstairs. They don't match. And you walk into one of these nice church people that's on duty and you walk up to them and they take a double take. Oh, no, Lord. What am I going to say to this poor stinking thing? And then finally they back up. And they remember what they're supposed to do with human beings. They come there for help. And they say, brother, and you think, damn, they don't know their own kinfolk. And then they say, have you been saved? You say, great, great in the morning. If I've been saved, what do the rejects look like? And somewhere along the line, there's been a breach in communication. And you go sit down and listen to some guy talk about Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and your stomach is howling and hollering, and you're getting shaky. And all they got there are donuts, and you know it. There ain't an alcoholic in the world like sweet stuff. And all you're going to get is a donut and a cup of coffee, and you can't leave. And you sit there and work your way all up and get up into where there's a lady up there, a real kind-looking lady, full of teeth, like that. You know, she said, come on. And you go in, and she wants to know if you'd like to pray. But if you've been on the bum very long, you can pray just as good as she can, because you've been taking them nosedives for a long time. And she says, shall we pray? And you say, yes. And you go over, and there's a bench about this high, and you kneel down to pray, and you've got that bottle of wine in this inside coat pocket, and it hits that bench and flops that out on the floor, and the turtles, and they throw you out in the street. And you give them a sermon of your own, which they do not understand, and they can't find it in Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John. But you're sincere. Every alcoholic is sincere. I never have met an alcoholic that another alcoholic couldn't communicate with. No matter where you meet them, where they are, they understand. And it don't have to be a great prepared speech. All it's got to be is the language of the heart. And that's what you learn in AA, the language of the heart. And you learn to read between the lines, and you learn to listen between the words. We're still on tradition three. We ain't going to get through tonight. I ain't speak to you all night, but I ain't going to hurry. This is a condensed version. You can't take the traditions and rush through them. If you do, you're not going to know any more about them than you did when you came in. Because that's what's been done year after year after year. It's sort of like, did you ever go to a place where they read the same thing? I'm not talking about the Masons or Knights of Columbus or the Eagles, Elks, Moose. But everybody has a ritual. And when they're going through this catechism, everybody's sitting there picking their nose and shifting from one cheek to the other. And when it gets through, nobody heard it. Does that sound familiar? How many times have you heard the fifth chapter? Do you remember when you first heard it and how impressive it was and how the words all fit together? Do you remember the last time the fifth chapter was read and you was picking your nose and shifting from one cheek to the other or whispering to somebody sitting next to you, how's Mary? Or how's Joe? Or did Herman's cow get all right? That hadn't got too much to do, but if you hadn't heard that in a long time, it would impress you a great deal more. I'm talking about things that are traditional in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not talking about the Eagles, Elks, Moose. I was a Mason for a great many years. And I got so bored at listening to that same catechism over and over that I believe I would have joined the Knights of Columbus if they would let me in, just to hear if theirs was different. Tradition four. Each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. What does autonomous mean? Autonomous means self governing. And each group has the right to govern itself and make little rules and regulations to govern its group. And that's called autonomy. Every group manages its affairs as it pleases, except when AA as a whole is threatened. If this group or any other group does something that's hurting AA as a whole, every member present, when some discrepancy takes place, is obligated to call attention to the group about it. And this causes controversy. The controversial issues will come up in Alcoholics Anonymous as long as there's two of us. But I'll tell you something. You stick around AA and you'll learn to disagree agreeably. You didn't learn that in the bar room. Is such liberty dangerous? The group, like the individual, must eventually conform to principles that guarantee survival. Two storm signals, A group ought not to do anything which would injure AA as a whole, nor affiliate itself with outside interests. An example, a center that didn't work. AA centers are what I believe you were talking about, or somebody was talking about, and you came in tonight, you're talking about starting an AA center or an AA service center. There's going to be controversial issues. Who answers the phone? How much do they get paid? Should they get paid? Read the traditions. It tells you each AA group should be responsible to no other authority than its own conscience. That's the group conscience. That means that you have a system whereby you govern the actions in your own group. You have a committee, a steering committee, they're usually called, but whatever you call them, that's a group of people that sometimes are referred to as bleeding deacons. And I don't know, we used to call them bleating deacons, you know, like sheep. And we told a story about them that they were like flies. They bunched themselves and let us AA member go ahead and do the things that need to be done. But that's a cop-out. You've got to have somebody that loves AA enough to spend the time and do the things that make other people uncomfortable. AA is designed to comfort the discomforted and aggravate the comfortable. Anybody gets too comfortable, watch them. You ain't supposed to get comfortable in AA. You're supposed to get serene. You say the 12 step ball, you say, how many times have you said the serenity prayer but never applied that to yourself? Did you ever refer to yourself as, like, I am the serene Charles Lindenwood? Wonder why. You pray for serenity. You pray for peace of mind. Did you ever walk up to somebody and say, man, I'm at peace? They'll start digging a hole to put you into that. At peace. That takes a while, don't it? You see, it takes a while. Don't worry about it. If it ain't got you, you ain't got it yet, you get it. Alcoholics Anonymous distresses the comfortable and comforts the distressed. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship that survives on pain. We might get to this in a little while. No, it's no secret. Growth is a result of pain. If you didn't hurt, you wouldn't change. If somebody didn't tell you you were doing wrong, you'd keep on the same wrong road, wouldn't you? Let's take a road map, for instance. This is a road map. But you ever see a map of Georgia? It's got all kinds of roads going everywhere. But if you're going from one spot to another, you trust that. You have faith in that map. And you get on that road and this road and that road, and it'll take you to the town that you wanted to get to. And you never have been lost till you get to the town you're going to. Let me give you an illustration. I'm going to St. Louis before long, and I ain't going to have no trouble till I get to St. Louis. I will get on a plane, and it's going to take me right to St. Louis. And when I get off the plane, I'm going to have to ask somebody where to go. And some of them jokers may tell me. With respect to its own affairs, each AA group should be responsible to no other authority than its own conscience. But when it plans concern the welfare of neighboring groups also, those groups ought to be consulted. And no group, regional committee, or individuals should ever take any action that might greatly affect AA as a whole without conferring with the trustees of the General Service Board. On such issues, our common welfare is paramount. Do you know that we have what we call a General Service Board, but until 1953, and that hadn't been too long ago to some of us, until 1953, Alcoholics Anonymous was not Alcoholics Anonymous. It was the Alcohol Foundation. And the reason we called ourselves Alcoholics Anonymous is because the book Alcoholics Anonymous became a bestseller, and it had a catchy title. And that's why we adopted the name Alcoholics Anonymous for our fellowship. Tradition 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. And I touched on that very briefly at first. The alcoholic who still suffers may be you or your neighbor, the man sitting next to you. But we all have times in our lives when we feel empty and we feel that we need the nourishment and the understanding of some fellow member of Alcoholics Anonymous. But we're a little hesitant to go to them and ask for help, especially you old-timers, because everybody thinks you got all the answers. Nobody ever thinks that you, as an individual, hurt too. But remember, the next time you see an old-timer and he looks like he's kind of down in the mouth, they call it depressed now. We call it having the blues in Arkansas. Next time you see one of them like that, go over. Use that old crooked arm therapy. Tell him you love him. I remember the first time that a man ever told me he loved me in AA. I hadn't been in very long, and I was still shaking. I was quivering. I hadn't wasn't up to the shakes yet. And a great big fellow, and he looked at me, and he said, "Boy, you doing a good job." I said, "You crazy. I'm dying." He said, "You ain't going to die." I said, "You've been sober a whole day." And he said, "You could have had a drink." He said, "You've elected to do without alcohol." He said, "You realize that that makes you a member of Alcoholics Anonymous just as much as Bill Wilson?" I said, "Duh." He said, "Did he too?" I said, "Man, that's great." And he said, he looked at me, towered over me, great big fellow. He looked at me and said, "I love you." I said, "I'm married." See, I didn't understand the universal love that we have for one another. But it's here in this room. And it's traditional in AA. If you haven't got to the point where you can look another man in the eye and tell him you love him, the time's going to come. And don't be embarrassed. Ain't nobody going to look at you and say, Because he has learned that he too has the capacity of love. And this is a tricky little thing. 5. Better do one thing well than many badly. That's still tradition 5. The life of our fellowship depends on this principle. The ability of each AA to identify himself with and bring recovery to the newcomer is a gift from God. What are we talking about when we say recovery? We mean that we come to a few meetings and go through the 12 steps and then say, "I'm cured"? No. When you came to Alcoholics Anonymous, you were hopeless and helpless. You were in a hopeless, helpless condition. Your life had become unmanageable. But now, your life is manageable. You're no longer hopeless, and you're no longer helpless. And you're no longer without power. You remember when you first came in, the first step you were confronted with was that you were powerless, meaning you were without power. You didn't have any power. But now, if you've gone through these steps and accepted them and turned your will and your life over to the care of God as you understand Him, you now have power. Sought through prayer and meditation. That means you pray and think at the same time. And for a person that wasn't any more coordinated than I was, I couldn't walk and chew gum at the same time. And you folks wanted me to pray and think, and it was so simple. You pray and think about what you're praying for. And they even told you what to do about it, what to say, how to pray. Praying only for knowledge of His will for you and the power to carry that out. Power. You now, you've got power. You're no longer powerless. And this is a gift from God. We in Alcoholics Anonymous refer to this as grace. The word grace means unmerited reward. We have this in AA meeting. But for the grace of God, there go I. And when we see somebody who's less fortunate than us, we feel this in our heart. What's wrong with putting it in a verbal state? What's wrong with saying to a guy or a gal, I understand, I've been there, I walk in your shoes, now, today. And how can you do that? You do that by looking into your rearview mirror and seeing from whence you came. And if you can't remember right now from whence you came, it would behoove you and me to get on our knees tonight and ask God to give us the power to remember why we joined Alcoholics Anonymous. Passing on this gift to others is our one aim. Sobriety can't be kept unless it is given away. That's another paradox. In order to keep it, you got to give it away. And that was hard for me to understand. Tradition 5. You're still on Tradition 5. Each Alcoholics Anonymous group ought to be spiritual, be a spiritual entity, having but one primary purpose, that of carrying its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. A spiritual. We all know that this program is spiritual. What do we mean when we say spiritual? We talk about a spiritual awakening, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of the, not a result, the only thing you're going to get out of this whole program is a spiritual awakening. Now, you can't wake anything up that ain't asleep. Your mind. Your mind and your spirit are synonymous. And you say, how can he say that? Think back of when you were doing things while you were under the influence of alcohol that you just couldn't believe you did when somebody else told you. Like they came to you and said, you ought to be ashamed of yourself for what you said to old Joe last night. And you didn't even remember seeing Joe. I remember one time I woke up in jail, which was usual for me, and this cop came up and he said, Charlie, you know where I picked you up last night? I said, I haven't got the foggiest. He said, I picked you up out on number 5 highway. You was stripped stark naked, and you had rolled up your clothes and used them for a pillow, and you had bedded down on the white line. And I thought that was one of the funniest things I'd ever done. I was ready for the second step. That's the sanity step. You've done something just as weird. It may have been in a hotel, or it may have been in your own home. It may have been in some place where you were in what other people refer to as solid comfort. But you can hurt just as much in the Commodore Hotel as you can in a flop house. or under the bridge. And you can be just as lonely in the very midst of your own family as the person who's sitting on the curb with his head in his hands. And you know that because you've endured it. You've been there. Six, problems of money, property, and authority may easily divert us from our primary spiritual aim. Spiritual aim, that means that your mind is no longer occluded. That means cloudy. A plimsest is when you're getting sober and something comes back to you a little at a time that you've done. And you think, oh God, I really did do that. That is something that is becoming clear that was hidden from you. The reason for this is God's grace don't give you all of the troubles at once, because we're not built to take them. But a little at a time, your story, your past, unfolds itself. And there's some secrets in your heart that you haven't told anybody yet. There's some things in your heart that's just between you and God. And sometimes you wonder why that thing says, admit it to yourself. You know what you did. How come you got to admit it to yourself and to God? God knows everything. How come you got to admit it to God? Admit it to yourself, to God, and another human being, the exact nature of your wrong. What'd you do when you finally got serious enough? You're going to do it. Tell this one a little, and that one a little, and this one, that one, play this one a little bit, and pray to God they wouldn't all get together? That's the way I did. And how come you got to tell God? God knows everything. God wants to know that you know that He knows you know He knows. That's faith. That's what that means. You develop faith. You know that God knows that you know that He knows that you know He knows. Then you and Him are communicating. That'll come to you after a while. I know that's one of my weirdies. But it works. And it's true. Problems of money, property, and authority may easily divert us from our primary spiritual aim. We think, therefore, that any considerable property of genuine use to AA should be separately incorporated and managed, thus dividing the material from the spiritual. An AA group, as such, should never go into business. Secondary AA aids to AA, I'm saying AA, when you know I mean Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what, just like say ETC, I'll say etc. I ain't going to say ETS. I should be saying Alcoholics Anonymous instead of AA. Thus dividing the material from the spiritual, an Alcoholics Anonymous group as such should never go into business. Secretary aids to Alcoholics Anonymous, such as clubs or hospitals, which require much property or administration, ought to be incorporated and set apart that if necessary, they can be freely discarded by the groups. Hence, such facilities ought not to use the Alcoholics Anonymous name. Their management should be the sole responsibility of those people who financially support them. For clubs, Alcoholics Anonymous managers are usually preferred, but hospitals, as well as other places of recuperation, ought to be well outside Alcoholics Anonymous and medically supervised. While an AA group may cooperate with anyone, such cooperation ought never to go so far as affiliation or endorsement, actual or implied. An Alcoholics Anonymous group can bind itself to no one. Now, this in some people's eyes would be called a club. But I want to give you a little something that you may not know. Alcoholics Anonymous in the beginning started from the club atmosphere, just such as this, and the groups sprung from the clubs. The clubs did not come from the groups. And if it hadn't been that way, we never could have survived, because we gathered together hour after hour in the afternoon and in the mornings, and we talked sometimes until way late in the night. If you go to a group and they open the meeting at 15 minutes until 8 or 8:30 and they close and everybody's gone home 15 minutes after, you haven't had but an hour and a half of Alcoholics Anonymous therapy. And how many hours are in the day? And if you only go to 2 or 3 AA meetings a week, and there's no fellowship available in the meantime, wouldn't it be nice to have a group or a club where you could go when you had that hungry, lonely feeling? It kind of makes you restless, don't it? But you're not negligent. It's our societal structure that makes us feel comfortable. And what do I mean by this? I got mine, you get yours. That's an awful thing to think, isn't it? There's a lot of drunks out there. Let's let them all get it. I've heard people say, you don't go out looking for drunks. Bob and Bill were together for weeks. And finally, Dr. Bob got so angry with Bill, in the first place, he was freeloading on him. He didn't have any money. And he had talked to him and he'd listened to him for weeks and weeks. And finally, Dr. Bob said, let us go out and find another drunk. He wants somebody to be the third member. And they found him. Guess where? He was in the hospital and he was in a straitjacket. Talk about what do you call them when you got somebody can't get away? He was it. Anyway, the hour's up. And we didn't get halfway through. And I don't want to keep you here until we can go through these. But I hope that each and every one of you will take this book. You all got one. And look at it. Read the traditions. Read the traditions in the short form. Read the traditions in the long form at the end of the book. And compare them with yourself and your thoughts. One thing that I talked to a lady the other night, and she was concerned. There's something in here that I want to read to the group, because I wonder how many people have been sober 3, 4, 5 years. We used to call that the danger period. Why? It's because after this length of time, you've usually served in some capacity on a committee. And others have come up behind you and rooted you out. Did you ever run for an office in AA and didn't get elected? That kind of hurts when you think everybody loves you. But they love the other person too. And this book tells us that we ought to move aside and let these young people come in and take our place. And then what is your responsibility to them? To guide them and whisper good counsel in their ear. Maybe this sounds as though the alcoholics in AA had suddenly gone peaceable and become one great big happy family. Of course, this isn't so at all. If you don't believe this, go to the next committee meeting. If you've never been to a committee meeting, prepare yourself for a shock. We are human beings, and we squabble. Before we leveled off a bit, AA looked more like one prodigious squabble than anything else, at least on the surface. A cooperation director
who had just voted a company expenditure of $100,000 would appear in an AA business meeting and blow his top over an outlay of $25 worth of postage stamps, disliking the attempt of some to manage the group. Half its membership might angrily rush off to form another group more to their liking. Elders, temporarily turned Pharisee, has sulked. Bitter attacks have been directed against people suspected of mixed motives. Despite their din, our puny rows never did AA a particle of harm. They were just part and parcel of learning to work and live together. Let it be noted, too, that they were almost always concerned with ways to make AA more effective. How do we do the most good for the most alcoholics? God bless you.